Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 51. It's July 9th, 2020. How long does it take to become elite at your craft? And what do the people who master their goals do differently than the rest of us? That's what John Hayes, a cognitive psychology professor at Carnegie Mellon, wanted to know. For decades, Hayes has been investigating the role of effort, practice, and knowledge in top performers. He has studied the most talented creators in history, people like Mozart and Picasso, to determine how long it took them to become world-class at their craft. Furthermore, he has investigated the choices and experiences that have led to their success. Let's talk about what Hayes has discovered about world-class performers. And more importantly, let's discuss how you can use these insights to achieve your goals and become your best. Hayes started his research by examining successful composers. He analyzed thousands of musical pieces produced between the years of 1685 to 1900. The central question that drove his work was how long after one becomes interested in music is it that one becomes world class? Eventually, Hayes developed a list of 500 pieces that were played frequently by symphonies around the world and were considered to be the masterworks in the field. These 500 popular pieces were created by a total of 76 composers. Next, Hayes mapped out the timeline of each composer's career and calculated how long they had been working before they created their popular works. What he discovered was that virtually every single masterwork was written after year 10 of the composer's career. Out of 500 pieces, there were only three exceptions, which were written in years 8 and 9. Not a single person produced incredible work without putting in a decade of practice first. Even a genius like Mozart had to work for at least 10 years before he produced something that became popular. Professor Hayes began to refer to this period, which was filled with hard work and little recognition, as the 10 years of silence. In follow-up studies, Hayes found similar patterns among famous painters and popular poets. These findings have been further confirmed by research from professors like K. Anders Ericsson, who produced research that revealed that you need to put in 10,000 hours to become an expert in your field. This idea was later popularized by Malcolm Gladwell. However, as Hayes, Ericsson, and other researchers started digging deeper, they discovered that time was merely one part of the equation. Success wasn't simply a product of 10 years of practice or 10,000 hours of work. To understand exactly what was required to maximize your potential and master your craft, you had to look at how the best performers practiced. The practice habits of NBA superstar Kobe Bryant provide a perfect example. Kobe Bryant is one of the most successful basketball players of all time. The winner of 5 NBA championships and 2 Olympic gold medals, Bryant has amassed a net worth of more than $200 million during his playing career. In 2012, Bryant was selected as a member of Team USA. During this time, one of the athletic trainers for Team USA, a man named Robert, was working with Kobe to prepare for the Olympics. In the story below, which was previously published on Reddit, Robert describes his first experience with Kobe and reveals one of the reasons the superstar has become so successful. From Robert, trainer for Team USA. "I was invited to Las Vegas to help Team USA with their conditioning before they headed off to London. I've had the opportunity to work with Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade in the past, but this would be my first interaction with Kobe. The night before the first scrimmage, I had just watched Casablanca for the first time, and it was about 3:30 a.m. A few minutes later, I was in bed, slowly fading away, when I heard my cell phone ring. It was Kobe. I nervously picked up. 'Hey, Robert, I hope I'm not disturbing anything, right?' 'No, what's up, Kobe?' 'Just wondering if you could help me out with some conditioning work, that's all.' I checked my clock. 4:15 a.m. 'Yeah, sure, I'll see you in the facility in a bit.' It took me about 20 minutes to get my gear and get out of the hotel. When I arrived and opened the room to the main practice floor, I saw Kobe, alone. He was drenched in sweat, as if he had just taken a swim. It wasn't even 5 a.m. We did some conditioning work for the next hour and 15 minutes. Then we entered the weight room, where he would do a multitude of strength training exercises for the next 45 minutes. After that, we parted ways. He went back to the practice floor to shoot. I went back to the hotel and crashed. Wow. I was expected to be at the floor again at about 11 a.m. I woke up feeling sleepy, drowsy, and pretty much every side effect of sleep deprivation, thanks Kobe. I had a bagel and headed to the practice facility. This next part I remember very vividly. All of the Team USA players were there. LeBron was talking to Carmelo, and Coach Krzyzewski was trying to explain something to Kevin Durant. On the right side of the practice facility, Kobe was by himself, shooting jumpers. I went over to him, patted him on the back, and said, "Good workout this morning." "Huh?" "Like the conditioning. Good work." "Oh, yeah. Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it." "So when did you finish?"
"Finish what?"
"Getting your shots up. What time did you leave the facility?"
"Oh, just now."
"I wanted 800 makes. So yeah, just now." For those of you keeping track at home, Kobe Bryant started his conditioning work around 4:30 a.m. Continued to run and sprint until 6 a.m. Lifted weights from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. And finally, proceeded to make 800 jump shots between 7 a.m. and 11 a.m. Oh yeah, and then Team USA had practice. It's obvious that Kobe is getting his 10,000 hours in, but there is another part of the story that's even more important. Kobe isn't merely showing up and practicing a lot. He is practicing with purpose. Kobe had a very clear goal at practice, 800 made jump shots. He was deliberately focused on developing the skill of making baskets. The time he spent doing it was almost an afterthought. That sounds simple, but it's very different from how most of us approach our work each day. When most people talk about working hard, they use the amount of time they worked as an indicator of how hard they worked. For example, I worked 60 hours this week. Putting in a lot of time might make you tired, but simply working a lot, even if it's 10,000 hours over the course of your career, isn't enough to make you a top performer. It's not the same thing as practicing deliberately. Most people who think they are working hard are merely developing the skill of being in the gym, not the skill of making baskets. To keep this basketball analogy going, consider this quote about deliberate practice. Consider the activity of two basketball players practicing free throws for 1 hour. Player A shoots 200 practice shots. Player B shoots 50. Player B retrieves his own shots, dribbles leisurely, and takes several breaks to talk to friends. Player A has a colleague who retrieves the ball after each attempt. The colleague keeps a record of shots made. If the shot is missed, the colleague records whether the miss was short, long, left, or right. And the shooter reviews the results after every 10 minutes of practice. To characterize their hour of practice as equal would hardly be accurate. Assuming this is typical of their practice routine, and they are equally skilled at the start, which would you predict would be the better shooter after only 100 hours of practice? Aubrey Daniels. This is from Aubrey Daniels. Each player in the example above could brag about practicing for 1 hour, but only one of them is practicing deliberately. Researchers have noted that top performers in every industry are committed to deliberate practice. The best artists, musicians, athletes, CEOs, and entrepreneurs don't merely work a lot. They work a lot on developing specific skills. For example, Jerry Seinfeld's "Don't Break the Chain" strategy is all about deliberately practicing the skill of writing jokes. Mozart has been called the genius of geniuses, and even he toiled away for 10 years before producing popular work. I don't know about you, but I find this inspiring. I don't have the natural talent of Kobe Bryant or the sheer brilliance of Mozart, but I'm willing to put in my 10 years of silence. I've only been writing on this site for 9 months, but I see this as the beginning of a 30-year project for me. And because I'm in this for good, I can win with commitment, grit, and unwavering consistency. You can take the same approach to your work, your goals, and your legacy. By combining these two ideas, the consistency of 10 years of silence and the focus of deliberate practice, you can blow past most people. On a daily basis, this doesn't have to look big or impressive, and that's good, because it will often feel like you're failing. What feels like struggle and frustration is often skill development and growth. What looks like little pay and no recognition is often the price you have to pay to discover your best work. In other words, what looks like failure is often the foundation of success. Thankfully, just 1 hour of focus and deliberate practice each day can deliver incredible results over the long run. And that brings us to the most important questions of all. Are you working towards your 10 years of silence today? Are you deliberately focused on developing your skills? Or are you simply putting in your time and hoping for the best? And that's a blog post. I can't remember what parts of this made it into his book, but this is James Clear. And it's really cool in lots of respects. It slices through a lot of what we've talked about over time here. Everything associated with education, really, that we've discussed. And I also, it struck me, I appreciate his describing, the player A and player B working on free throws, both putting an hour in the gym. And you want to make sure that what you're doing isn't just getting good at being at the gym. That's incredibly congruent with Gatto and Aldrich on school and just training yourself to be good at being in school, going to school, as opposed to learning. And in the best of cases, even there, just learning things that you know, not learning things to do. I also love the notion of sort of leaning into failure over and over and over and over, just failing all the time. It runs so contrary to, massive homework and grades and everything. I suppose you could, on your homework, you could yourself be failing, failing, failing till you get it right. And hopefully people are. But it reminds me a lot of the Acton Academy in Laura Sandifer's book, talking one of the owners of an Acton Academy in Latin America, saying that they don't do very much with grades. It's true. But in her mind, every student gets 100 on everything because they're forced to keep working at all these individual skills over and over and over and over until they get it right, until they nail it, until they get 100. Only then do they advance to what's next. And they carve through the material much, much faster than average. So it's fascinating stuff. Kobe's obviously a hero. He was an incredible basketball player, but one of the things everybody recognized in him was how hard he worked. That was talked about all the time. Had that kind of fire, like a Jordan or somebody like that. That just, yes, the best at it. But it's very hard to pick apart and deconstruct nature versus nurture or natural gifts versus how hard he worked. He's sort of 10 out of 10 on all factors. It reminds me too, a buddy of mine during business school, at one point, his family had 4 seats on the floor for Spurs games. His parents lived in San Antonio. And I went down there to, 2 or 3 of those games. And it's really quite something to sit on the floor. And it was about at the free throw line. And because you see, obviously you see these incredible athletes up close. And they're just amazing because they're so gigantic. But they're also so agile. They're just so fluid and athletically gifted. They're just obviously at the top of their game. And I was there once for a Laker game, and I was struck, just having watched on TV, I was struck by how skinny a lot of them are. I mean, they're all muscle, but like Kobe's skinny. They all looked like, almost all of them, looked like wide receivers maybe or defensive backs. That night, of course, the Lakers have a couple of exceptions at that time, Karl Malone and Shaq. And Karl Malone was just so amazing because he's that fluid and agile and gifted. And he's huge. He's more like a defensive lineman, really. I mean, he's a big man. And then Shaq's otherworldly in sheer size. But Kobe was just, you know, and I think Gary Payton, like, you could tell. And Gary Payton never stopped talking trash and giving people a hard time. He was hilarious. But you can also tell it was very interesting. It seemed like, and I guess perceptions can be deceiving, but it seemed like even before tip-off, like you knew Kobe was the best player on the floor just by looking, just at a glance. You could just tell. It may have been the way he carried himself or the way others treated him, but truly, you could just tell by the way he moved and the way he looked around, like he was also a mad genius of the game, and so he's processing information faster and better than everybody else on the floor. It was clear. Another funny thing from that night: there was some sort of scuffle just down past us towards midcourt. There was a loose ball. People are, you know, trying to get the ball sliding and. And then there's a pile up, and there wasn't a fight is way too, there wasn't a fight. There was a scuffle though. And, you know, fans down there having to stand up out of their seats, and there's this scuffle on the floor, and Shaq decided to come break it up. And Shaq kind of walks over, and it felt like he was just grabbing these players on both teams by the back of their necks and just picking them up and setting them where he wanted them to be. Like, I'm going to separate all of you and make peace here. He just was, just this gigantic human being. And again, gigantic, still with that that level of fluidity. It's like say an offensive lineman in the NFL who's 350 pounds and can run all of us down, can like chase us down despite their massive size. It's really cool. It's really cool that people can get that good at something. And have that much talent. So I love the idea here too of player A versus player B, that by analogy, you go to the gym and you're going to work on your free throws, but in the hour, how many free throws do you get? How many free throws do you take? How much time do you waste going to get the ball when you miss a shot, bounds over somewhere else and you don't have, versus if you have a friend there who's kicking the ball right back to you, or having multiple basketball, so you can just really keep grooving and recording the results. And even the idea of, did you miss short, long, right, left, and reviewing every 10 minutes. If you remember, like in that example, player A only takes 50 shots, player B 200 shots, and player B is the one who's also taking breaks every 10 minutes to review. With the review time and the recording time, also achieving 4x the sort of unit of practice, because time isn't the thing. Time isn't the thing. Time is the thing. Time isn't the thing. 10 years of silence is also a cool kind of phrase or term of art there, and for all of us to kind of imagine a decade block. But what you're trying to do is, per Seth Godin yesterday, it's like, where can you find 100-hour block, 1,000-hour block? Inside the 10 years to really drill on this one thing just for yourself, to apply yourself and develop yourself, but then watch out because you're developing real skills. And if you're applying the Austin Kleon type of idea and you're sharing those pieces with others through your work and by showing your work, like, really interesting things are going to start happening. And that is the engine of progress. Now we're back to Julian Simon. And the break on the development of humanity is our imagination. It's wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff. James Clear is great. Atomic Habits is great. His blog is great. I also appreciate, like, he's already, I don't remember where I happened upon him. Some, you know, friend or somebody kicked him my way, as often happens. And he's saying here, at the time, personally, he's only 9 months into this thing and blogging himself. And he has done quite a good job of just doing a little bit, just a little bit each week, and writing well and sharing it and sharing as he goes. He's obviously studying these ideas and doing deep dives and then bringing it back, really simple kind of stories that bring us all into this material. So he himself too, kind of like Austin Kleon, is just an example. He evidences the power of the ideas he's recommending, his own frameworks he uses, and you see the strength in the results. It's really cool. And here's hoping more of us do that ourselves, because there's just so much opportunity in the world. And how do we know that? Because there's lots of problems in the world, and those problems need fixing. And there's good money to be made in fixing them very often. Often if there's not good money to be made in fixing them, there's incredible savings. There's money being spent and wasted, squandered, so long as these problems aren't fixed, and fixing them just radiates wealth and calm and peace and assets in so many directions. It cascades. So all of these opportunities exist for all of us. By the way, last little note, it's not yet 7 a.m. I got up before 5 o'clock in the morning again. I didn't yesterday. Yesterday I got up about 6:15 maybe, but I'm trying to set my alarm and be vertical before it's 5 o'clock in the morning. And with respect to player A and player B in gym, I do want to get better at being player B in the gym. When I get up, there's purpose that I've set stuff, the trite sort of little tricks, like to set the things out the night before and just be ready to hit the ground running. Cause there's little point that you can tell yourself, oh, I worked 60 hours last week, but maybe you just mostly were flailing around. Doesn't do me much good to get up before 5 in the morning and then just goof around until 7. Might as well have been asleep. But really the lesson is be deliberate about it. And, there's books like Talent Code and other places where they really dived into the research of that Anders Ericsson. Fascinating stuff. We'll do more of that soon. And I hope you all have a good day. I'll post this one by 7. Kind of fun. Thanks.